This property here has seen about 80 drill holes to date, and all 80 holes have intersected gold mineralization. So that tells us that the breadth of the system is phenomenal. And so on top of that, as far as geological compelling evidence, it's the third richest placer mining jurisdiction in all of Alaska. So we have 1.4 million ounces of placer gold that's been historically mined from the streams or creeks. And that, you know, again, is an indication that, hey, how big is the source for all that gold that's been found in those streams or creeks? So a lot of layers of geological evidence that point to something that can be very much north of 5 million ounces.
Tony, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. I haven't seen you in about, it's been about 6 months ago. Let's start with an overview of tectonic metals again. Tell me where you're at and what you're all about.
Yeah, for sure. A gold exploration company focused in Alaska. Our job, quite simply, is to find the next gold mine. My team has done it before. Collectively, we've been involved in over 30 million ounces of gold being discovered. So we branched out into Alaska, and we're advancing this project called the Flat Gold Project.
Got it. You're in my old stomping grounds. I knew that when I met you, as well as I have a few different companies I'm invested in Alaska. How do you like it up there?
Well, the mineral endowment is spectacular. I think it's definitely going to be experiencing a bit of a renaissance, in the sense that, you know, with the deregulation that's happening right now and the flight to homegrown resources, reducing our dependency on other countries, and also just, you know, the major mining companies just moving to, you know, safer, predictable jurisdictions. And so Alaska ticks all the boxes. So it's been great.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, please, I guess I already know the question this, but for all of our viewers, the surrounding area, tell me about that before we get into the project, because one of the questions I always get is, what kind of infrastructure, since you're dealing in Alaska, what kind of infrastructure is around there? Do you already have power that's easily accessible and roads and that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, that's something that we look at before we even acquire a project, is we ask the questions, you know, what would a mining scenario look like here? And what are the economic thresholds that would make or break a project? So this project here, the on-site, we have a Hercules capable airstrip. So that can land like a military type plane. It's 48,000 pound payload. It's a huge benefit to have that permitted and usable on your property. We also can connect to a commercial barge landing site where we can utilize that barge 6 months out of the year. It's the cheapest and most, sometimes the most efficient, but definitely the cheapest way to get materials to and from site. We also have some roads directly on site. Now, the type of mining scenario that you're targeting, you know, dictates how much power you need. And, you know, most gold deposits, for better or worse, aren't located next to a highway or connected to the grid. So the mineralogy or the how the gold is recovered is extremely important to making a remote jurisdiction work. And case in point, we had our last company that we sold for $520 million to Newmont. It was not connected to power or a road system, but it was an open pit heap leach project. And heap leach mines use the lowest amount of power, and you don't need the robust infrastructure that you need with more complicated type of deposits.
Got it. Well, let's talk about now the deposit then and the project itself. What are you looking to find there? What have you found? Work that out for me.
Yeah. So first off, the mineral belt, the reason why we're in this mineral belt is that it's already produced a 40 million ounce gold system. That's called Donlin. It's owned by Barrick and Nova Gold. So the fact that this mineral system can produce such a magnitude of a deposit, you know, tells us that maybe there's another one lurking in the shadows. This property here has seen about 80 drill holes to date, and all 80 holes have intersected gold mineralization. So that tells us that the breadth of the system is phenomenal. And so on top of that, as far as geological compelling evidence, it's the third richest placer mining jurisdiction in all of Alaska. So we have 1.4 million ounces of placer gold that's been historically mined from the streams or creeks. And that, you know, again, is an indication that, okay, how big is the source for all that gold that's been found in those streams or creeks? So a lot of layers of geological evidence that point to something that can be very much north of 5 million ounces.
North of 5 million ounces of that was, if you hit that, if that's what you have, you'd be very attractive to a major. So that's pretty key, I might add. Let me ask you this. Let's talk about, your really background here. You said you sold a project of $520 million just previously to this. Is that correct? Tell me about that and your background.
Sure. I mean, the company was called Tamanant Gold Corporation. And we took this project that was never drilled before to that magic number, 5 million ounces. It was just over 5 million ounces. We produced the robust feasibility study. So that's the most rigorous economic engineering study. And then it was an open pit heap leach gold project in the Yukon. And we actually had three major mining companies bidding on that asset. And Newmont was the winner.
Kind of sounds like what you have now potentially, right?
Well, it actually does. It's got the Placer Gold Endowment. It's got commercial barge landing. The mineralogy is a bit different, but it appears to be another open pit heap leach. And we like heap leach projects, especially when you're in a capital constrained or inflationary environment. Heap leach mines are the lowest CapEx to build. They're the lowest operational costs and the lowest environmental impact. So if you have something that's heap leachable, your thresholds for something economic become lower. And, you know, no one wants to build a $10 billion mining scenario. You can get away with a $300 or $500 million. You know, that's on the lower end of the cost spectrum and definitely more palatable.
Got it. Okay. This is over at Chicken Mountain, right?
So the flat project is the name of the project, but the main target there is called Chicken Mountain.
Right. So being from Alaska, I'm not familiar with Chicken Mountain.
Yeah.
Tell me exactly where that is in the state, like in proximity to, I want to say, I kind of do maybe, you're up Glen Ellen. Is that correct?
So it's southwestern Alaska is the, and then the closest or most notable location would be Anchorage. And so we're about an hour, depending on the type of plane, an hour to an hour and a half flight towards the southwest from Anchorage. And again, Donlin is about 40 kilometers away. So those are I would use those two reference points to kind of reacquaint you with where exactly we are.
Okay. How did you find this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I get that a lot. Sometimes we have these crazy scientific generative initiatives where we're like, okay, let's look for, gold in this basin because of this. This one came about because I was intrigued by Donlin, a 40 million ounce gold deposit, fifth largest undeveloped gold deposit in the world. And I was just fascinated by it and size and magnitude. And so I knew we partnered up with an Alaska Native Corporation. They actually happen to be our second largest shareholder. And they're also the largest private landowner in the state of Alaska. So I knew they had land in this mineral belt. And I reached out to them and said, what do you have I know you have land in this area. Can I take a look at it? And the VP of lands literally responded that, we got this thing that this guy, I think he's a billionaire. His name is Robert Friedland. He drilled this in the mid 80s. And I said, the mining icon Hall of Famer, Robert Friedland. He goes, I think something like that. He's with Fairbanks Gold. So that really got my ears perked up. And, that's how the general initiative, I was looking for another Donlin, but this time that wasn't refractory. Donlin's a refractory deposit. So again, very costly. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, can this mineral belt that's produced a 40 million ounce gold system, could there be one more lurking in there? And typically, gold deposits aren't one-offs, right? They tend to cluster and form. And if a mineral belt is fertile, you'll see more of these formations over these deposits. And so we got this. The other thing I should mention is that this Native Corporation wasn't publicly soliciting a partner for it. I mean, they have 12.5 million acres under management. They're in all types of industries. So this was a bit forgotten. And then we were the first company in 20 years to look at it. the data is not in the public domain. You need a relationship or partnership with the native corporation to access it. And off we went. So we jumped into the data and then were super intrigued by the Placer Gold Endowment. It's rare. Like there's other places that were involved in the famous Klondike Gold Rush, or there's Placer Gold happening. And for, again, for those listeners that don't know, that's you're mining the streams and creeks for free gold. But to have a potential deposit where the drilling was and seeing every stream or creek draining out of this topographical feature carrying gold, you know, clearly that's the source and is source 10x. So if you found or mined 1.4 million ounces through the streams or creeks, typically your bedrock source is like 10x that. And that got me really excited because I'm like, this thing could be huge. And then I found Robert Freeland drilled these holes with Fairbanks Gold. Every hole hit gold. And there was 54 drill holes at that time, historically drilled from the mid 80s to the 2003. And they were just fantastic holes too. Like not every hole was spectacularly mineralized, but nonetheless, it was enough to get us excited and pull the trigger and acquire the asset.
Okay. So now you get my attention here. Is this on federal lands or is this on native lands or is this on state lands?
It's predominantly on native owned land. And that's kidding. Good from our perspective.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you. That's huge. No.
Well, by design, we intentionally, with hence the partnership, the Native Corporation, providing their pro business, pro mining, working collaboratively on native land, you avoid a lot of the paperwork or permitting or the regulatory hassles, if you will, if it was on federal land.
You could probably get a permit 12 months, 24 months.
Depending what kind of permit we're dealing with, there's still some permits that do require federal approval, and that's totally fine. But you know, if we want to build a road on native land or a camp, so we do direct the Native Corporation, and that's phenomenal. And then we're also united. Like that's the thing too.
That's what they want. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we submit our permit applications in tandem. We're, you know, constantly updating one another and saying, you know, how can we advance this project?
Okay. So let's talk about that. Where are you in that process then as far as your drilling? You have holes that have been drilled. You're drilling more holes. Where are we? Yeah. Where are we in your timeline? What's the goal?
I think we've drilled just over 80 holes in total. 80 holes, just over 80 holes have been drilled on the property. We will have about 16 holes that were drilled last year that will be released to the market within the next 2 to 4 weeks. Fingers crossed, we did test some new areas, so there could be a potential discovery that may manifest itself. There is no formal resource, and a drilled mineralized strike right now is 2 kilometers. And again, one of the holes from last year stepped out a kilometer. So if that hole hits, you have 3 kilometers of mineralized strike. So we've been sort of dating the system to put it in a certain way where we're trying to get to know where the best part is, because the anomaly itself, the Chicken Mountain anomaly or the Chicken Mountain intrusion, is 6 kilometers by 5.5 kilometers. It is massive. So we're the first ones to kind of systematically start exploring this. So we're testing certain areas and then connecting the dots and putting the pieces of the puzzle together to understand what's driving the gold mineralization, where's the better part of the gold system. So hence why there's no formal resource yet.
Got it. So do you have an ETA on when you'll have a formal resource? Will that be in the next 12 to 18 months? Or what's the goal on that?
The jury's the jury's out because we want to see what these results deliver. And then we have to be comfortable with where the drilling is. And is this where we want to, the center of gravity to be? So we have to be comfortable because when we start delineating a resource, you want to make sure you found the best stuff. And then, working it out from there. There's nothing worse than putting, dedicating time, energy, and to delineate and resource, and then you drill a discovery somewhere else. You're like, shit, that was the better part of the system. And we were just 10, 20 million there instead. Your question also is contingent on availability of capital, market conditions. So you know, I'd love to put out a resource, you know, probably next year or the year after. Right now, you probably could define a resource, but it wouldn't capture the entire 2 kilometers. So we're still in the holding pattern on when that may be. You know, a drill discovery also is worth its weight in gold, pun intended, and maybe dedicating funds to that. Testing again, there's still some areas that we haven't gotten to yet that may be more advantageous than really, you know, putting our blinders on and focusing on the 2Ks.
So reading between the lines to all of our viewers and listeners, Tony's being very conservative.
or aggressive, because I keep testing new areas.
Okay, it depends. Yes. Or aggressive, because you continually test new areas. I would absolutely say that, but you want to make sure you have what you think you have before you, as you said, put out a resource, which is very important.
We have an independent analyst that, you know, that's where you can get your sort of, you know, back of the envelope number crunching, or Crestcat, for example. A lot of they're our largest share, but they have these Friday YouTube sessions, and they've touted some numbers on there as well on size potential. So I would steer everyone if I were to wear my conservative compliant hat.
Tony, can you talk a little bit about Crestcat Capital as well as other major shareholders and who owns the stock, and just a little bit more about capital structure?
Sure. So the largest shareholder initially was the Native Corporation. They got ousted by Crestcat. When it presented this project to Crestcat, they went from a 10% owner to a 20% owner in the company. For those that don't know, Crestcat Capital is one of the most active resource investors, especially in the earlier stage projects. If you're earlier stage companies or exploration companies, you can Google them. They have a, you know, a macro fund that's done quite well, and then they have a precious metals and then a junior exploration fund. They're led by you know, the CIO is Kevin Smith, but he's been advised, and one of their directors of investing is Dr. Quentin Henning, who's a very well known, recognized and respected geologist that has worked, you know, on this side of the fence, and now he's advising Crestcat on where to park capital. They're big fans of, you know, the exploration space, but more specifically gold and where it's headed, where they think it's headed. So that's who Crestcat Capital is. And they do hold these Friday YouTube educational sessions where they talk about their holdings and, you know, and insights into geology and deposits and things of that nature. In addition to them, you know, the Tectonic team and a couple other resource funds like RCF, they have offices in Denver and Australia, you know, an international resource fund as well. And they own, you know, we them and a couple other smallish funds own about 10% of the company. So those would be the largest shareholders. So we're backed by the Native Corporation or Indigenous shareholders, Crestcat, Tectonic, RCF, a fund called Mackenzie, Gold 2000, and then, you know, some high net worth retail shareholders.
Excellent. Tony, if you could, if people want to know more about you, how do they find you? Give us your site and give us your tickers where you trade and the exchanges that you're traded on.
Yes. So the website's www.tectonicmetals.com. There's an info@tectonicmetals.com if anyone wants to, you know, subscribe or issue or ask any further questions. We're on the TSX Venture under the symbol TECT, and then on the OTCQB, the symbol TETOF.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Tony. We'll point everybody to your website as well as your email that you gave if they have any questions.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.